Ryan Tanner will inbound. He gets it over to the doctor. Time ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! He scores at the buzzer. And the Nets win 120 to 118.
I think we see Willis coming out.
Here comes Willis.
Carter, over to Kidd. Baseline drive. Kidd throws it up. Oh! How did he do it?
Randle on the drive. Stripped by Butler. Randle gets it back. Randle puts up a three. Bang! Bang! Randle knocks down the three with 0.7 seconds remaining.
With full court press coverage on all of the signings, trades, big games, and everything Knicks, Nets, and across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports. What's going on, everyone? Welcome into the newest edition of WFUV Sports' exclusive NBA podcast, Pick and Pod. I'm Chris Persiainen, and here in our lovely studios in the Bronx, New York, alongside Merrick Rhodes, alongside Chris Carino. Guys, perfect time of year for you two to be on this show. Maybe not Nets for Nets reasons, but because it's the time of year for the National Basketball Association. New edition, almost a WWE-style showdown in the play-in, the one-off game, meaning everything. But don't worry, if you're the 8th seed and you're 7th seed and you lose, you get another chance. Last night, the Lakers and the Pelicans, the Kings and the Warriors go toe-to-toe. Two fantastic games, and we've also got some games coming up tonight. Before we get into it, your guys' impression of last night's games.
First, I would just like to say it's an honor to be on this podcast. Longtime listener. Gripe I've had for a long time, Chris Persiainen makes an intro for this podcast. 40% of it is Nick clips, which is hilarious. Two out of the five, I was doing the math in my head as I was listening. And it's honestly, it's a gripe I've had because, as I said, longtime listener. But kind of just getting into that and a net gripe just almost immediately from this kid, which, you know, all three of our teams sitting at this table are going to be sitting at home watching the playoffs in about 3 weeks. So I really don't understand all the bravado coming from this side of the table. But with that all said and done, this play-in tournament, it just adds to the long list of just how amazing, or the amazing additions Adam Silver has made to this organization, and why Adam Silver is the best American sports commissioner and probably the best sports commissioner in the world. Play-in tournament's absolutely fantastic. We'll get into some of the stuff last night in one of those games, and one of those teams in those games, I think, kind of falls victim to the play-in and the one-game elimination, but we could talk about that later. But yeah, fantastic time to be making my pick-and-pod debut, and honestly, the NBA playoffs, they don't get talked about a lot in comparison to the other sports, but I can't get enough of it every single year.
Yeah, I mean, last time I was on pick-and-pod, it was right after Joel Embiid came back. It was kind of unsure where the season was going to go and how he was going to play, but down the stretch, they got hot, and they're going into a home play-in game against the Heat tonight. You know, it's interesting. I've been talking to my roommate. He's also a Sixers fan. It's
sorry,
interesting. It's interesting after years of you know, the Sixers were always kind of that third seed in the East, no matter how the season went or who was on the team. It's unique being in the play-in for the first time. So I'm both looking forward and anxious for the game tonight, because we all know the history of the Sixers and disappointing me every single year. And I'm officially getting to the point where they're starting to convince me again to buy into getting my heart broken, which I'm not looking forward to that part, but I am looking forward to watching them play tonight.
Absolutely, and I don't blame you. It's an exciting time of year, an exciting setting for these teams to be in. But
can I hit him with a question just kind of off the bat here?
Right now, let's do it.
With, like, from your perspective as a Philly guy, Sixer fan, obviously, the 7-8 game, do you feel less anxious and nervous knowing you have the one loss, or is it almost like doesn't matter?
I think more so in the East, yes, because you lose this game, you're playing the Hawks or the Bulls. Like, I don't think anybody's too intimidated by either of those two teams coming to your stadium to play you. So I think if it was in the Western Conference situation where it's all four teams are kind of scrappy and trying to get in the playoffs, I would be more nervous, but I don't think anybody's too concerned, Heat or Sixers fans, about having to play the Bulls or the Hawks.
It just feels like the 7 and the 8 seed and just kind of inevitably waiting.
I think the 7 and the 8 seed are scarier than the four, five, or six seeds. You know, it's funny how regular season basketball works out, and I, you know, the play-in is kind of part of why they want to incentivize teams to try and stay above it. But haven't the Heat, the Lakers have been in it every single year since it started.
3-0
so,
like, too.
LeBron always makes it out as the seven or eight seed. He always gets in the playoffs, but he's always in that play-in, and he was one of the guys who hated the idea when it first started.
I don't know what you're talking about. He always loved it.
He loved the play-in.
But also, I just want one more little aspect of the of Philly situation. The Heat roster and how they've played this year, they should not be a 5-point underdog. They should be like a 10-point underdog tonight. There's a lot of people, especially in Vegas right now, that don't want to get bit in the behind again by Jimmy Butler for seemingly the third or fourth year in the row in the playoffs. Every single year they come into the playoffs, you think, this roster's depleted, more depleted than it was last year. There's no way they can accomplish anything of note, and then Jimmy just does what he does, and they go to the finals. So I do kind of see from people all over the country online, but also in Vegas, people are kind of hesitant to write off the Heat right now, and I'd also be hesitant to write them off. Jimmy's been fantastic the last couple of years.
They're a machine, right? And we all know this is when they kick into gear.
Yeah.
This is when they get things started. You guys want to start with Heat Sixers?
Yeah.
And looking ahead?
Yeah,
and then we'll recap last night's games after, because you seem to want to talk about the Heat right now. Dude, let's just do it.
Yeah. I think it's the best matchup.
So who do you think wins, and tell us why? We'll start there so the discussion can go. I'm actually interested to see if you pick Philly here, because
I do think the Sixers are going to win, and I think it's going to be a great game. I don't think they're going to win in a blowout or anything like that. I just think that they're at probably the best point they've been at in the entire season down the stretch in these last couple games since Joel came back. And if you look at a couple of the matchups, what does make me nervous a little bit is there's only been one matchup this year in the regular season where Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid were playing against each other, and the Sixers won the game. I think it was like a 6-point victory, and a couple like two weeks ago, it was a huge victory for the Sixers at the time, because it got them to the 7 seed rather than being on the road in Miami.
Right.
But I just feel that they're hitting a groove right now. They've won 8 straight, and the Heat, their team doesn't really scare me too much. I mean, obviously it's the playoffs, it's Jimmy Butler, but I just think with the way the Sixers have been playing. They have Nick Nurse now. Joel's listed as questionable. Chris was talking to me about that before the show. But he's always going to be listed as questionable, especially coming off the injury. I think he's been listed as questionable every game since then.
Yeah.
So that's just going to be something that he's just going to have designated with him the whole playoffs. It's just avoiding what's happened in the past couple of years of re-aggravating whatever injury he got down the stretch of the season. So that's my main concern. Keep Joel healthy. Play your game. Run it through Joel and Tyrese. Have either Kelly Oubre or Buddy Hield or someone contribute their 18 points. Hopefully Tobias Harris plays better than he's been playing, because he's been really a bit of a question mark down the stretch, because he had points in the season where he played well, but down the stretch he was bad. So I do feel confident in the Sixers, but not a blowout or a handed victory in this matchup at all.
Chris?
I think this matchup is super interesting. It feels kind of like we get a lot of very similar matchups in the Eastern Conference every year. Not a lot of diversity in the playoffs. Seems like the same 5 or 6 teams are playing each other every year. When I look at this Sixer team all year long, watch them down the stretch of this season, specifically I remember me and Lou Orlando were away covering the women's basketball team. We were watching them in Boston. And the way they play, the configuration of the roster, it's a championship configuration 100%. But you obviously have one thing missing, and that's the head of the snake, the kind of engine that makes it go. But everything around it is kind of built like a championship roster, maybe even better built than they've been in the last 4 or 5 years. And now, if you can kind of just add even a not fully healthy Embiid, as we even talked about before the podcast too, but just a guy who can service that role even a little bit, this is a dangerous basketball team. I think people overestimate the Heat slightly. I think this is the year where people don't have to be hesitant when doubting the Heat. I think this is the year you can doubt the Heat and, you know, kind of get away unscathed without looking like an idiot. And I think the Sixers, kind of similarly in the opposite direction, this is the year you can't count them out, because it really feels like it's culminating this year in a lot of ways for guys like Maxey, and obviously the rest of that supporting cast. Is Oubre, what's the Oubre situation?
What do you mean?
Is he like after the car accident?
Oh yeah, he's been back for months.
He's been playing great.
Has he been out of the lineup at all? Like he's just been fully healthy.
He's been like the one consistent piece of the roster. Him and Paul Reed have been like the two guys who have like between the trades and the injuries. They've been the only two that have played like most of the season, obviously other than when he got hit by the car. But
Reed is a piece that I felt like he kind of got passed around the league a lot and finally kind of found his value a little bit.
I think he was he always on the Sixers? I thought they picked him up in the draft out of DePaul.
Because
it was Paul Reed out of DePaul, he's
24. You know, he's the only team he's ever played for is the Sixers.
But yeah, he played a lot of starting. He started a lot of games.
The stock skyrocketed
and
this year.
He had like a 30-point game this year or something like that. Him coming off the bench, the way he's been playing this year, I feel much more confident.
B-ball Paul.
With that's the one thing. I feel so much more confident in the bench being out there for the Sixers team. In past years, I feel like every time the bench comes into the game, I'm always like, all right, here's where it gets dicey, and here's where a team takes a 15-point lead, or here's a place where a team closes an 8-point gap. But this year it's different because I feel like the pieces they have on the bench are, A, more experienced, and B, just better. I mean, they have Kyle Lowry as their bench point guard with guys like Buddy Hield and Batum and Paul Reed. So I feel much more confident in the Sixers bench than I've ever felt in the past.
And Reed and even Bamba for some stretches, like they got minutes due to Embiid being out, and they kind of got to see some glimmer that they wouldn't have normally seen, which is kind of interesting. The whole Kyle Lowry experiment, I feel like, isn't really worthwhile or kind of even
they don't
working.
Need him to be any huge contributor though. He's just there to be a voice and be a guy who can back up Tyrese if he needs a couple minutes on the bench. But Tyrese is going to play a ton.
Yeah, kind of campaign vibes kind of guy. Buddy Hield, I feel like, was the move when I saw where I thought they were really going to make the push, especially to make it kind of a configuration of a real roster that can go out and win.
Yeah.
Obviously, you need Embiid there. But a guy like Buddy Hield is somebody I feel like hasn't been on a lot of contending rosters, but is a contending kind of Jay Crowder kind of player in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I mean, they have DeAnthony Melton theoretically coming back within the next... He probably won't be back tonight, but he'll be back at some point in the first round. And defensively, he'll be important because when you have DeAnthony Melton out there with Joel, it's just the more defensive players you can have around Joel Embiid, the better the defense is going to be.
Yeah, and historically, Tobias Harris is the third option I don't fully trust, but it doesn't feel – I don't feel super scared about it anymore, anxious about it anymore, just due to how well this roster is kind of configured behind him and what you said kind of about the bench and kind of finally having trust in your bench a little bit.
I also think for Philly – you know, all year there's been the storyline of like Tyrese Maxey, most improved player. And even though I don't think that should be an award he wins because I thought he was this good at the end of last season, the point is more that he's now in that stratosphere of like, this is a really legitimate offensive contributor who is 97th percentile in offensive EPM, who is not a weak spot of a defender to the extent where you have to really hide him. He gives you that effort on the ball. The problem for me with Philadelphia is more. I think it's just more about the depth of their rotation, right? So like, Buddy Hield was a fantastic pickup for them, and if teams decide to take their primary defender and use them on Maxey to try and negate him, Embiid's going to tear you apart because his passing is so improved this season. He doesn't need to dribble a couple times, draw two defenders, and then find the open man. Like, he's passing the guys open. He and Hield will tear apart your team if you try to negate Maxey. So you need to be guarding Embiid down low. If you want to let him go one-on-one so that he's not passing, that honestly could play.
Probably going to lead to a lot of free throws.
The way UConn did with Edie, right, if you want to talk about it like that. Yeah. But that's the thing, is Embiid, even though he's a big man, will kill you at the free throw line. So you'll be fouling out your best centers. You'll be, you know, things won't be so easy. With Bam Adebayo on him, it's a really intriguing matchup because anyone that helps is leaving open a Maxey, a Hield, usually a great shooter like Melton. But for Miami, I think they get a pretty good trade-off. No Rozier for them, no Melton for Philly. I think advantage Miami there. Even though Terry Rozier is so good, Melton means more to the Sixers than Rozier does to the Heat. They do have Tyler Hero to make the kind of shots that they got Rozier four so that Hero didn't have to be the only guy on the roster that can make those kind of shots, you know? For a one-off game, I actually think the Heat have like a real fighting chance against Philly. So I'm going to go with Philadelphia, but really not confidently. And I might be leaving the studio
saying, I wish
I picked Miami. Here's the question I want to turn it to for the sake of this being a New York basketball podcast. The winner of Heat Sixers plays the New York Knicks in the first round. Who, between the Sixers and Miami, presents the better matchup for New York? Who should the Knicks be hoping wins tonight?
It's interesting because I feel both ways there's kind of a level of danger, like if we're kind of thinking about it in ceiling terms where it's pretty high. But also, I think matchup-wise, especially without Randle, you don't want to see him beat. And I understand the history, and I watched last year. I understand that, you know, a lot of people in blue and orange probably still having nightmares about Jimmy B. But I think if we're talking lesser of two evils here, just don't think you want to see Embiid. I mean, I understand how good Hartenstein's been, and I understand how much confidence you have there, but not enough confidence against a guy who was running away with the MVP after 2 weeks this year and then got hurt. And, you know, has probably been the best player in the NBA for the last 3 years, aside from a guy in Denver. So I just, if you're looking at the two sides, I don't think you want either. And I think you kind of got yourself in a bit of a precarious situation here if you're, you know, the New York Knicks. But the thought of Embiid and the thought of Hartenstein just absolutely getting barbecue chicken for four to seven games just can't be a prospect that you're willing to give up in favor of not playing the Heat, who I honestly, aside from Jimmy, not really scared of in a lot of ways, even though the potential, obviously, in past years, like we've seen, is definitely there.
Yeah, I probably agree with you. I mean, there's definitely bias involved with it, but for all the same reasons, I just think, is Mitchell Robinson going to be back for the playoffs? Because I've heard, that's what I've been here. I wasn't sure. I was not familiar. But
Isaiah starts, right?
Yeah, and he'll start. He will start even with Mitchell back, because what he provides, especially with Randle out, is a release valve and pick and roll. So like, if Jalen draws two on the pick and roll, they blitz it, he can dump to Isaiah, and Isaiah from the high post can find someone who's open in one of the two corners, as opposed to Mitchell Robinson, who
take it to the rim.
His passing game, no, he doesn't put the ball on the floor.
I'm saying if he leaks, and that's like, there's no option to pass there. There's no option to move the ball.
You just, Jalen gets trapped because he's small. So,
yeah, I mean, I think either way, I think you don't want to match up with Embiid. I think the Sixers right now are just, because they missed Embiid for a huge chunk of the season, a majority of the season, and in that time they had a very bad stretch of games. But if you look at them with Embiid, their record is extremely good. I don't know what it is to be exact, but it's a very
really
good record.
Good, yeah.
And I think they're looking to carry that over into the playoffs. And I think him coming back when he came back was the best you could ask for, because it gave him time to ramp up, and he had a couple of those Joel Embiid 39-point, 15-16 rebound games, and I think he's ready to do it in the playoffs. And I think I like that they have Nick Nurse. I think Nick Nurse is a better coach than Doc. I think probably
for sure. Oh, easily.
Yeah. Just for sure. I mean, obviously, but it just gives me a different sense of confidence in the Sixers, and
yes.
I think he plays well with the roster in Philly that you were talking about with Joel and Tyrese. I think he works very well with them. So I just think it's a different looking Sixers team, not only in where they are seeding wise, but compared to the past years with the Harden year and all those other playoff years in between when they lost to Boston all those times. I think it's a different team than that, and I think you'd rather play the Heat, who are more, I'd say, similar to what you saw last year, and you kind of know more what to expect with that Heat team, and I think they're even a step back from what they were last year. So I think the Knicks would match up better with the Heat, but I think either would be a competitive series.
And this is the only time we're gonna do Knicks stuff. So I had one little thing I would want to bring up, maybe like a silver lining of this Randle situation. Mm. I understand, and you're free to call me stupid here, Chris.
I might.
It's a little out there, but when you kind of think about this whole Randle being injured going into the playoff situation, is there almost a silver lining that you have full confidence that in those big moments late in games, Julius is not taking the ball away from Jalen?
He wasn't.
Ever?
So like, if he was doing that, like then sure.
Yeah.
But if he was taking a shot late in a game, it was because
Jalen got double teamed and he was open, not because he waved. I've never once, I watch every single time the New York Knicks put feet on the 94-foot hardwood, not once has he ever in a late game situation waved off Brunson or broken a play to just get a shot off himself. It just doesn't happen.
But, like, so you think Tibbs, let's say 14 games they play this year in the playoffs, Julius, one of those games, if he's healthy, doesn't get the ball? If it's close?
He should. He's a 6'9", 255 wrecking ball who can shoot from the baseline mid-range or from three-point. He's really versatile. All his issues are defensively, honestly. And, like, processing on offense, it's like Giannis, where Giannis needs a couple seconds to dribble and look around the court to read what's going on. Mm-hmm. The difference is he's 6'10 and can just go to the rim whenever he wants.
Right.
Randall kind of needs to go to the rim and then fade away and hit the jumper. So it's more volatile of a shot selection. But ever since the Knicks got a player that's better than Julius Randle, all like the spin memes and all like that, like the babe, like that just doesn't happen. His game is more streamlined because it has to be if he wants to win games.
And you're kind of looking at it a little more intricately than I am. I'm just more speaking of, like, there's more of an inevitability with Brunson, and I just feel like even when you said Giannis, like, I feel the kind of same inevitability on the offensive end with Brunson as I do Giannis. It's like this dude is either going to get to the line for two or it's going in the rim. Like, there's no way to stop him. Like, you can rarely get him not either making a basket or getting fouled going the other way. And Randall, I just never felt that way. Even in a play where it breaks up, he gets double team, something like that. I would, not saying I'd rather have a double team Julius than an open Julius Randle, but like kind of.
Because like, he'll find someone else.
Like, no, or he'll just get someone to the body and one, or he's going to line for two. Like, I really think, I don't think it's a good thing Randall's gone, because obviously, you know, self-awarely, you would rather have the option. Mm-hmm. But I do think kind of streamlining the attention and streamlining who's making the good and who's making the money isn't necessarily a bad thing either. And I think Julius is a little insecure maybe slightly about that.
Nah. I think everyone saw that. I think everyone predicted that to the point where they, like, made it up in their own head. So everyone was like, oh, Julius will never defer to Brunson. Like, we're screwed.
He has.
And then he just did. And everyone's like, oh, well, Julius doesn't try hard enough on defense. And then he became the best defensive player at the start of this season that he had ever been in his career before he got hurt. And it was like, at a certain point, you got to be like, all right, this guy doesn't think he's a number one on a championship team. He doesn't play like he thinks he's one. He plays like he's a number two, and he's a star in his role. But I think we're getting off track here, from what I'd like to talk about, but just from what we're here to discuss, the NBA.
I don't want to talk about it, but yeah.
let's go out west, right, to hit two final points. Let's talk about last night's game, your guys' takeaways, because all the playoff matchups are not set yet. So as fun as it'll be to prognosticate what'll happen in the first round, we still don't exactly know.
Big word. What a word.
Lakers-Pelicans. Zion, playoff environment debut.
Yeah.
Wow.
Almost
true.
The quintessential Zion Williamson experience. 40 points, 11 rebounds, one team on his back, and he exits with 3 minutes to go with the left hamstring
issue. I was going to say, injury.
Going to keep him out for the whole play-in. Guys, start with you, Merrick. What did you make of Zion's debut in the playoff environment? What did you make of the fact that he's looking at Anthony Davis in a pick and roll and going straight at him? What do you make of the fact that he's guarding LeBron, blocking him several times in the game? Like, what do you see when you see Zion's debut?
I mean, in one word, like, finally. I feel like since Zion's hype train began back in high school, it's always led to this type of moment where it's him in a big game in the NBA and putting his team on his back and giving an all-time performance, which is exactly what he did. And it's really such a shame he got hurt. I was watching a little bit of this game before I had to leave my apartment with my roommates, and one of them's not a huge basketball guy, and he was like, isn't Zion like kind of bad? Like he had like those years with all that stuff, and we were all just kind of like, no man, he's really starting to become exactly what everybody thought he was going to be, and I think last night was a culmination of that exact thing, and him becoming exactly what everybody thought he was going to be, that dominant force for this Pelicans team.
Yeah, last night helped me relate with Zion in a lot of ways and kind of the effort in question always, and kind of everyone thinking that he's not this guy, this Kobe mentality, and he's not this hard worker. When you get hurt like that constantly, it has to be deflating. Like, it has to be deflating, especially when you're dominating at literally the highest level. Yeah. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and then again, just the story of your career, it's happening once again. Kind of feel similarly about this New Orleans roster as I do Philadelphia in a lot of ways, because it kind of feels like a well-structured kind of throne waiting for its king to kind of sit on, you know? And it's very well done, but in the middle, there's just a hole, just waiting for someone to fill. And I think that Zion's always been that guy. Zion's had 1A energy since he was in South Carolina and he was 16 years old. But now everyone is seeing it with their own eyes. I didn't need to see it. I knew it was there. I've been on the Zion hype train. Zion is one of the only guys to play at that other school in Durham that I can actually, like, you know, not want to just throw myself out of a window. Hey, Kyrie. But I think that Zion here is really kind of also not only establishing the 1A conversation, which I think also basketball people knew, but I also think giving hope to New Orleans. Because in a lot of ways, this New Orleans team has had the exciting, fun, young vibe for like 5 years now. And it's kind of getting to the point where we're not seeing results. And especially in a place like New Orleans, where it's not the Knicks, where just immediately it's a party after the first round. You really need to get people to care. That is what games like last night do. Obviously, you don't get the victory, but keeping it that close, showing everybody, hey, our guy is just as good as their guy. He is. He's just as good. I think that's massive. It's also just massive to have that sense of belonging. I always say it in every sport. Sense of belonging is like maybe the most important aspect in all of sports. And I genuinely think, obviously, it's hard with the injury, but New Orleans as an organization, I think, took a big step last night.
Absolutely. I think the other thing to talk about, though, and with New Orleans in mind, is Brandon Ingram watching crunch time from the bench. Did you guys even notice in the moment that he was benched for clutch time in the game? Did you guys feel like he was missed? He and CJ both had really bad games, and Willie Green kind of said, all right, CJ, we can hide defensively. We're going to put him out there. He can play point guard. And then I'm going Dyson Daniels, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, and Valanciunas or Nance. Like, what did you guys make of B.I. watching from the sidelines in the game's most important moments?
I mean, I wasn't – I only watched the beginning of this game, but I was obviously keeping track of it on my phone. And I mean, just seeing the – not only – we obviously just talked about Zion's performance, but to go in the complete opposite direction and see kind of not really anybody around him that he really needs to help him, especially playing a team where you're going up against LeBron and AD, is unfortunate. And, I mean – when you're shooting that poorly, when you're shooting 4 for 12 and CJ McCollum 4 for 15, it makes sense when you're in crunch time situations and you're in a close game. Do you really want the guys who really can't seem to make anything out there? I don't think that's probably the right attitude. So it doesn't surprise me that they ended up on the bench, but now with the injury, you can't really be having those performances again with no Zion, because even with that performance that Zion put on last night, it still wasn't enough, and now you're missing out on that entirely. So it's that much more pressure on Brandon Ingram and McCollum. So it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back. They obviously have to bounce back, or they're going home. So it's on them to turn it around and make up for the poor performance to really, really dampen Zion's performance.
Seeing Brandon Ingram not out there down the stretch, it felt like playoff basketball in a lot of ways. It did. It felt like when coaches are kind of just throwing everything at the wall, seeing what sticks, and kind of these smorgasbord of lineups end up being out there late in games. It honestly had me very excited in a lot of ways. Also, an aspect of this whole Zion thing needs a guard. Needs somebody, a point guard, a facilitator.
That's supposed to be McCollum, man.
That's insane. That's insane. For the last 3 years, Zion Williamson's primary facilitator has been CJ McCollum. And in my head, I was just thinking about it just now. If he was playing in blue and orange at the Garden, like that would, like that team would be so good. But
it would be kind of special.
Just shut up. but I do think that's a major aspect of this, because I think they treat him in New Orleans like he's LeBron, where he could take up the ball and then just get to the rim. And obviously he can to a certain extent, but he's also not LeBron. He's not this guy who's going to play point guard and do everything. That's not what he does. If you throw it to him in the post and he could just put a hole through somebody, like that is his game, and that's what he can do. And he had to conform to this other style of play due to how this roster's configured. And yeah, the roster's configured well, but in certain aspects, you got to realize that he needs a point guard. Like, it's really simple. Like, he needs a point guard. Somebody trade up, get Rob Dillingham, do something. Get this guy a point guard. I don't know how, but just do it.
I hear you. I think the thing is, point Zion, when he's got the ball in his hands, is so good.
Yeah.
Point B.I., when he's got the ball in his hands, is so good. But this might be the rare case of those two can't coexist. You know, people tried separating Tatum and Brown forever. I remember the Embiid-Simmons discussions. Like, is it just never going to work? Obviously, that, for certain other reasons, didn't play out. But my point is more, when people say two young players can't coexist, I tend to just automatically be like, yes, they can. You know, Zion and B.I. might both be in a situation where their best is point forwards. And one of them would have to give up that point part of that. I think it would be Zion play finishing for Ingram. The problem is, if Ingram's shot isn't falling, then no one respects his creation. The defense doesn't collapse on him. He doesn't draw two, and Zion doesn't get open looks in the dunker spot. So that's definitely interesting. I want to throw it to the Lakers for a second. Just one question for you guys. What kind of chance do they have in this rematch versus the Denver Nuggets, who swept them 4-0 last year? But Jokic just said today, Lakers were the toughest opponent they played all playoffs, and that's what it looked like, too. Each game was close.
Yeah, a week and a half ago on one-on-one, they asked Western and Eastern Conference picks. I said the Lakers will be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
That would be a new one, so considering they play in the West.
Oh, and well, your team won't be there either.
For the first time in franchise history.
Your team won't be there either, so it's fine. Two first times this year, the in-season and an Eastern Conference Finals. No. I think they'll get there. I just feel when I look at the Western Conference and I look at all these rosters, who is their first-round matchup?
Lakers?
Yeah.
Nuggets.
Oh, Nuggets, right. I knew that. That's what I meant. I think that the Nuggets, in my opinion, those are the two best teams. I think if they were to be matched up against Oklahoma City, they'd be shaking in their boots. Matched up against Minnesota, they're shaking in their boots. A lot of these teams would not want to play the Lakers. Nuggets are the only team probably that isn't scared of them. Literally probably the one team in the 30 associations that is not afraid of LeBron, not afraid of Anthony Davis, and definitely not afraid of Darwin Ham. This is where it gets interesting. If the Lakers can somehow just play four really good basketball games in this next seven, I think they're going to win the championship, like in a real way.
I you know what? It's a hot take, but it's a good hot. Like, I like that.
Yeah, and I felt even in the end season when they won that, this team just has a little bit of championship dust on them. I don't know how to explain it. You kind of know it when you see it,
this
especially in person.
This configuration has won the chip before. LeBron, yes. AD, role players.
Yes, and it's a thing you feel, and I saw it a couple weeks ago. LeBron was in town. I got to have the privilege of witnessing LeBron be LeBron and have 40, and they just have this little glimmer on them when they come into the building, when they run out of the tunnel, you feel it. And it's not just LeBron, it's the Lakers, and it's just them as a unit. They're together. They seem like they like each other. They're so talented. So many dark horses on this roster that can take over an entire playoff game just seemingly out of nowhere. This Laker team, I think, is probably the most dangerous threat. And honestly, looking at the box score last night, getting close to the end of that game, LeBron and AD, neither of them had more than 16 or 17 points. And still, at the end of the game, it just felt like they had all of the impact and all of the difference.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of good points. I just think if you're the Lakers, you probably would have preferred to play the Nuggets later on than the first round. I don't think it's impossible for them to beat the Nuggets. I just think it's probably I just don't really see it. I just think the Nuggets are a really good team. They're a really deep team, and they play so well together, which we've seen for so long now over the last year, 2 years with for the most part with this team. Jokic is a beast in the playoffs. He's a monster. I mean, yes, the Lakers are very good, and yes, this configuration has won a championship, and yes, they gave the Nuggets a really good battle in what was eventually a sweep. I could see this series going six or seven games, but I just don't know that the Lakers will be able to beat the Nuggets. But if they do beat the Nuggets, I think that would propel them to what you're talking about of reaching the finals. I just don't think they're going to get the Nuggets.
Yeah, and it's like even me, it reminds me so much, even how you're just talking about it, Merrick, when I was picking my bracket and I had UNC winning it all. It's just picking them to beat UConn. It's just, I don't feel right here putting it. I don't actually believe that. It's more just kind of with my heart.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got one final question for you guys. The Kings Warriors play-in game last night showed us a couple things. The Kings aren't a two-man show. Keegan Murray is one hell of a ball player.
Oh, man.
But it also showed us what felt like, you know, it felt like hearses were about to drive out onto the court for the Warriors dynasty. Like, the last 8 minutes of that fourth quarter felt like a legitimate funeral. It's like, hey, Uncle Steve. Yeah, no, good to see you. Yeah. Wish it was under better. I know. Aunt Lisa, how we doing? Yeah. Like, it was just the most depressing end of a game that was low-key close. Here's what I've got. Yes or no, and tell me why. Is the Warriors dynasty as we know it over? Merrick, I'm starting with you.
I would say as we know it, definitely, because I see the main pieces they have starting to slowly branch off. I mean, Iguodala retired this year, I believe, finally after being more of a mentor role on the team. But I think Klay is probably going to be gone after this season, and who knows about guys like Draymond and stuff. But I think in terms of the dynasty as we know it of Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green will be over. I mean, I don't think Steph is ever going to leave Golden State, but in terms of that trio and all the championships they won, I think that will be over. Will the Golden State Warriors not make it back to the playoffs with Steph Curry? That probably will happen because he's Steph Curry, but the dynasty as we know it will be over because at least one of those three pieces, probably Klay, is gone this offseason.
Yeah, Steph. It feels like when you ask that question, Chris, my initial reaction is as long as 30 is in blue and yellow, it's never over in a lot of ways. It feels like as long as Curry is on that roster and in San Francisco, that they're going to have this at least rolling in some capacity. Mm-hmm. But last night, it
was bad.
And I was just thinking about this in my head just now as I'm sitting here. If it's not over and Steph does it again in Golden State and wins a championship.
Yeah, that's all time.
Like, is he the GOAT?
No, he's locked for top eight. He's locked for top six to eight. Ever.
Top eight, four different generations of championship, winning a championship in like four different generations of basketball, basically, in the NBA. Like, that might be one of the great rebuilding and unrebuilding like four times and winning championships with all of them. That would be, I can't even think about the kind of accomplishment that would be. I would love for him to get out of there, honestly, in total transparency. Just go somewhere else, win another ring, go play with LeBron, please. Please play with LeBron. That would be awesome. Make all my dreams come true. Make really all my dreams come true if it was in black and white. But I'm getting way ahead of myself.
What are we, in the 40s? The Lakers jerseys don't have color anymore? What are we doing?
That was good.
Trust me, I'd always rather wear black and white than blue and orange. Anyway, I genuinely think when you look at this...
You're a ref. You're a loser. That's why.
Oh, okay. Work.
Give it up.
Calling refs losers. Way to just alienate yourself against every referee. That's why just the dumbest thing in sports is to say, ref, you suck. When a crowd chants that, I always just want to like...
Are the Warriors done?
Yeah, the Warriors are done. The Warriors, but you guys know that, like logically, that's backwards to be like, ref, you suck. Anyway, they're
he's not gonna give it up.
They're done, and it felt like they were done last year in the same exact series. Difference there, Steph was Steph in Game 7, and they advanced. In a lot of ways, this feels like a bookend, not only for Klay, because it really feels like that might be the last significant basketball he plays. Might be the end. Not only is it the end for Draymond, just feels like the end of this era of basketball almost in a lot of ways. Because you look at the standings, Oklahoma City, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Minnesota Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards. It really feels like it might be a bookend on this 2010s era. And it's sad, honestly. It is sad. I have a lot of fun things to say about Sacramento, but it doesn't feel right now just due to the tone I'm speaking with about the Warriors. And it just feels like the end of some sort of era. I don't know what era that is, but it really felt substantial last night, and it made me almost emotional a little bit in some ways.
Well, guys, we have so much more basketball to watch this week, but that's going to do it for us this time on Pick and Pod. Thank you so much for listening. Again, Pick and Pod is WFUV Sports' exclusive NBA podcast. If you want to stay up with the New York Knicks playoff pursuits, follow Colin Lochran and myself on Twitter or TikTok or the WFUV Sports YouTube. We'll have our post-game reports up. If you want to stay tuned with the Brooklyn Nets in the postseason, you're in the wrong decade, fella. Anyway, thanks so much.
Just
the sports
wait, buddy.
Director of WFUV is Bobby Chaffardini. Thanks so much for tuning in and stay with us.